Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 130. It's the 6th of August, 2010, as we record this. You'll be listening to it on the Monday. With me, I have, as usual, in Sussex.
Hello, everybody. It's Rafe Blanford here.
And up in Hull.
Hello, everybody. This is David Gilson.
And Ewan's out Edinburgh fringing. He's probably pumping up the Royal Mail right now, annoying everybody. But we have the insight to ourselves. Rafe, you've been out and about this week. Now, there's something that I saw pictures and videos of you running across London bridges with a rucksack on your back and generally annoying all the tourists. What was that about?
That's right. That was part of the Conspiracy for Good, which is the kind of transmedia experiment that Nokia is running in conjunction with Tim Kring, who was the producer of the TV show Heroes. And as part of the whole Conspiracy for Good as a project or transmedia exercise, if you like, they've been holding live events where they've been doing augmented reality gaming. And this is where using London as a canvas to play a game in the real world. And it's all tied up with the wider Conspiracy for Good story, which is about the evil corporation Blackwell Briggs building an oil pipeline across a village in Africa. And as part of the sort of augmented reality gaming, you meet some of the characters from the story who are trying to stop the evil Blackwell Briggs. And on this past weekend, it was all about having a meeting with Blackwell Briggs to return a stolen contract. It was all very exciting as the black Range Rover drove up and gave back one of the people that had been kidnapped, and corporate espionage and evil goings on in general. And then it was out into the streets to try and track down some CCTV footage. And this is where the augmented reality gaming came in. Using a modified version of Nokia Point and Find, you're able to pull video and stills off the closed-circuit televisions, which were scattered around London. I won't really comment on the technical, whether this is actually possible or not, but this was the aim of the game. And it was actually using QR codes, but you had to be standing next to the camera at the time. So it was both location and time specific in terms of the point and find element of it. And it emerged that Blackwell Briggs looked like they murdered one of the members of the Conspiracy for Good. And I should point out that the Conspiracy for Good is an action group designed to combat the evil doings of Blackwell Briggs. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, I've already been along to one of these, and the final action is this weekend, or rather last weekend as people are listening to this, and I'll report back from that final event next week on the podcast. But to suffice to say, this is kind of an experiment for Nokia about how you can tell stories, how you can move on the sort of narrative of things like television shows or web shows, combine them all together using events in the real world, storytelling on the web through blogs, through Twitter, as well as, of course, traditional video and things like that. It's certainly been fascinating to be involved in, and I'm going to try and write this up in more detail once it's complete, because I think we'll be able to give a better picture. Yeah. But it's certainly been an eye-opening experience in terms of where things are going, and I think the social element to it in particular is very compelling.
And I gather they equipped you all with X6s for the purpose, with their nice capacitive screens.
That's right. I mean, this is sort of the Nokia element of it, if you like. In one sense, there's no direct link to Nokia. Somewhat unusually for these kind of augmented reality gaming, the Nokia presence is relatively small. And I think it's sort of a reflection of the fact that Nokia sees this as much as an experiment in the medium itself rather than a chance to promote its own technology. But yes, X6s were given out to sort of use as, say, point and find and QR code. So there was a mobile element to it. But compared to some of the other augmented reality games that have been sort of sponsored by corporate organisations, this is very much, I think, more about exploring sort of as a pilot project how this can work going forward in the future. And in one sense, you know, it's a step on from the Nokia game that was so popular in the 90s. It's that kind of exploratory thing. And but clearly there is some sort of brand recognition and sort of loyalty building in there. And so I think for Nokia, it's both a marketing exercise, but I think more particularly it's an experiment to see how mobile phones might play a role in this, because, you know, they use mobile games that are available on the Ovi store and things like that to kind of tie in as part of the transmedia experiment. So, as I say, very interesting indeed.
Yeah. To give you a break from talking, Rafe, then can I come to David next? David's been going in opposite direction, actually looking specifically at something new and shiny. You have the C6 has arrived, all about Symbian Towers, and you've been taking a look at that. What are your first impressions?
Okay, it's actually a nice phone. Don't have any serious complaints with it. It's if anyone's used the N97 or N97 Mini, the user experience is very much the same as that. It's the same home screen widgets and pretty much the same set of applications. I am starting to wonder, as I look at more phones, along with the N97 Mini and the C6, if 3.2 inches is starting to become a little bit restrictive for a touch interface, especially after having borrowed your i8910, Steve.
Yeah.
The hardware design is nice. The front of it is actually quite reminiscent of a 5800 with the resistive touchscreen, 3.2 inches, and the like hard keys for call, reject, and menu. The C6 was aimed to be a budget phone, and it's completely made of plastic, which does reflect this. The buttons along the side for like the camera and volumes and lock slider, they certainly have like quite a no frills feel to them, even with like quite sharp corners actually. But it's partly because of the curvature of the phone's design, but they actually have to be that thin, which makes them a little bit uncomfortable. And also the curvature of the like the backside of it actually makes it a little bit slippery to hold, especially when you're trying to deploy the keyboard. Actually, the keyboard does actually have a nice solid feel to it. This probably doesn't work for audio, but there we go. It's got a 2 millimeter charging port and micro USB, although there's no USB charging, which is very disappointing. It's got the same battery as the N97 Mini, which you'll probably get through a day on it, but you'll be kind of like constantly thinking about it. And the other thing is, with it being a budget phone, it was supposed to be a lot cheaper than saying get me a 97 Mini. Although with the retail prices, there's only a £50 difference. So I'm going to be looking at this over the next week or two and deciding whether that £50 difference is enough.
Yeah, I think the pricing here is quite an interesting one, David. I mean, inevitably the price of the C6 will drop in time, but I think, as you say, right now it's about a £50 difference, which is harder to justify. By the time it drops below £200, you should say at the moment it's around the £250 mark if you get it from sort of online stores, or £280, I think, from Nokia. Whereas if it drops below £200, it's very similar to the pattern that the 5800 pricing followed. I think it then becomes a lot more attractive. What did you make of the keyboard in particular, you know, comparing it maybe to the N97 Mini?
I like how the keys are laid out. I mean, there's two shift keys and all the modify keys are along the bottom. Nokia have still failed to do what something I complain about on both the N97s is that the space bar is still off to one side. And I just think that's silly. But the space bar should be in the middle so both thumbs can get to it. But it is a nicely laid out keyboard. I do like it. The D-pad on the right hand side is nice, and it's not too much of a trial to reach over it to type. Although actually I actually found that I can't type as quickly on it as the N97 Mini. The N97 Mini had much more firmer keys. These are kind of softer keys but larger. So it's comfortable but not as fast input.
That's interesting. Just to let people know, I've also had my hands on the C6 before it went up to David, and I actually found the C6 keyboard better than the N97 Mini, but I think that just underlines the fact that it is relatively subjective. I think the other significant thing about the C6 keyboard is it kind of comes from the school of the E75 with that flat keyboard. It's a similar form factor. It's got the same central bar, which is actually a mechanism to sort of part of the structure of the slider. But it's also made up of four rows of keys as opposed to the three rows on the N97 Mini. And personally, that's a layout I prefer. With the space bar, I've actually got used to having it offset, and I find it makes more sense having it there where I can hit it easily with my right hand rather than having to extend it. But as I say, I think that's part of the subjectivity of it. I think with the thing that stands out for me about the C6 is the sort of comprehensive nature of the software that's now on it. You know, if we look at the early fifth edition devices, you know, when you got them out of the box, they didn't necessarily have all the obvi goodies ready to go. And now you get a very complete kind of out-of-box experience, which a lot of people say it doesn't matter, but the vast majority of people, that is a significant factor, because they don't necessarily go away and download all the latest updates. So it does have the most recent version of Ovi Maps and Ovi Store on it, as well as some of the other services. Also notable is it's got a new version of Nokia Messaging, which both in terms of performance but also in terms of the layout on the screen is more efficient than the previous versions. And so that was a big plus point for me. No doubt that will be coming back to some of the older devices in due course. I also think, and I don't know whether David would would agree with having noticed the same thing. I'd say the C6 was just slightly snappier than some of the S60 5th edition devices I've tried before. Now, part of this can be explained to the fact that when you get a brand new device, it does tend to not be bogged down by things. If you've been using a device for a while, we all know they slow down. But I think it also reflects kind of the maturity of S60 5th edition. This is very typical of Nokia's phones. By the time one of the software platform versions has become mature, and this is true of most of the S60 3rd edition phones as well, they're a lot more stable and the performance is better than when they first come out. I guess the other question I wanted to ask David is, have you had a chance to play with some of the multimedia features or the camera, and did you, pick up anything on those?
The camera is something I'm waiting to try as I get further into the review. I've been looking at other aspects of it so far. I agree about how it's snappier, and a great example of that is the music player. I've thrown a lot of music onto it. The C6 comes with a 2 GB card, which I've upgraded while I have it. And I've thrown a lot of music on, and the music library updated very quickly, which is a notable problem in most S60 phones. The other thing is, I think Ovi Maps, it's got 3.03, which is updated enough, but there is an upgrade to 3.04 available already.
There we
go. Yeah.
David, in terms of installing new versions of Map stuff, that of course eats up CDIS space. Is the C6 like the N97 Mini with a huge internal drive?
Yes, it's got plenty of space on it. That isn't a worry for me. And I'll just... I've just loaded a couple of applications on it, and at the moment we've got 234.6 megabytes free.
So things like the Qt libraries and add-ons and upgrades, they'll all be no problem. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Race. Also been, there's multiple trips to London over the last couple of weeks. You really have been out and about. You went to a launch day for the N8 for developers, which a fair number of other bloggers and writers were attending, but you spotted something they didn't. You managed to spot that the N8 on show had a brand new version of the Ovi Store client.
Yes, that's absolutely right, Steve. I did get to see the new version of the Ovi Store, and it was looking very promising indeed. Just one thing to note immediately, that when we originally published this piece, I said it was based on Qt as opposed to web runtime. I've actually had some further information to indicate that's no longer the case. So it does continue to be based on web runtime, despite what our original article said. However, I think it's probably quite telling that the performance improvements were such that it kind of reinforced my belief that it was based on Qt. So that's just a correction from the original article. We apologise for that mistake. There's some miscommunication that's gone on. So just to emphasise that the new version of the Ovi Store client is indeed continuing to be based on web runtime, although, as I'll now comment, there are a lot of changes and improvements in the new version of the Ovi Store client. But yes, it was much better in terms of performance. This is going to launch with the N8, but I imagine it will find its way on to other devices in due course. But I think the other significant bit of it was it's a completely redesigned client, and it has what I referred to in the sort of text piece on this is a flatter hierarchy. So rather than hiding things under the options menu, it's all available as single taps on the device of the screen. And this is things like channels, which has now been renamed collections, but also categories. So it makes it a lot easier, more intuitive to browse through the content on the store. It's also, as I say, more responsive. And I think some of the sort of renaming and reorganization of the various bits and pieces makes a lot of sense. As you say, this was part of the N8 sort of developer day in London. There was a slight bit of confusion, I think, over what exactly it was. Some developers were expecting a more technical focus, but really it was a chance for them to come together, meet with Forum Nokia people, get a demonstration of the N8 as well as an update on Nokia's developer thinking. It will be familiar to anyone who listens to this podcast. It was things like the Qt strategy and the way that Forum Nokia sort of realigned around three key areas, which is sort of design, develop and distribution. And that's reflected in the tools and some of the materials that Forum Nokia are making available. But I think for a lot of people, it really clarified the Qt strategy in terms of that's kind of the single native layer running across Symbian Amiga, as well as Java for Series 40 and Symbian, and Web Runtime, which will be both Migo and Symbian. It was interesting to, as ever at these events, talk to some of the developers, and as you'd expect, very mixed feelings in the room. There are a lot of people who had written off Symbian who had come along to see if there was an update, whereas there were some long-time Symbian developers who wanted to see what the N8 involved and get the latest update. You know, I think it's easy to be sceptical in a room like that, and I think London is probably a difficult audience because there does tend to be some cynicism involved. But in general, the developers fell into two camps, those who were sort of existing iPhone and Android developers, who I think were sort of disappointed with the day and said, you know, they expected to get a Nokia device out of it so they'd be able to walk away and start developing. And those from who had maybe developed on Symbian before or were, I think, probably better informed about what Nokia was doing, who said, you know, the N8 gave them a great deal of optimism for the future and they felt that Nokia was doing the right thing. And as ever at these events, Nokia was underlining that it wanted feedback, it wanted a community spirit. But, you know, building that community spirit isn't going to happen overnight. So I think they're going to need to do more events of this nature. As part of this, of course, there was some hands-on time with the N8. And this is sort of 4 weeks, 5 weeks on from when I last played with it. And there's, yeah, very noticeable improvements in the quality of the software. It's just a bit snappier as well, fewer error messages popping up. I mean, in the time I played with it, I didn't really see any error messages come up, which was in contrast to kind of a little bit ago. So I think the software is a lot more stable, getting a lot closer to release. There are also some additional things. We've already mentioned the Ovi Store client, but I saw BBC iPlayer operating for the first time on the device, and that was running about 30 frames a second. You know, for the UK market, at least, I think that's a really good selling point of the N8, especially given the fact you can put it out onto an HDMI screen. It will be upscaled rather than native sort of HDMI resolution, because that's what the BBC is providing. But even on a big screen, I think it looked pretty slick. And I'd say, you know, running at that kind of 30 frames per second, it was eminently watchable, even on, you know, a big widescreen TV. Which, in contrast with the current version of iPlayer, which you can, you know, use TV out on the current devices, but it does sometimes look a bit choppy and a bit blocky. So it looks like they've changed the kind of the resolution and the bitrate for the N8, and that, of course, will be done on the BBC end. There are also, yeah, you know, a number of applications, some of the gaming that we've seen in N8 videos. And in general, I would say certainly much more stable and close to the release. Certainly made me think, yes, it's going to be much better in terms of quality than, you know, even a few weeks ago. So from that point of view, thumbs up. And Nokia said, you know, there still wasn't the final software. There's a little bit more work to be done. So, you know, you can't make any final assessment, but I would say it's looking good for the N8 release date.
Yeah, Riff, just a very quick question on the N8. I mean, I've been trying Steve's i8 and i10 lately, and also been looking at some iPhones. And you can, and in the general user interface, you can tell when things are scrolling that there is a higher frame rate on some devices than probably a lot of S60 devices. And you were saying about the video frame rate on the N8 and that it generally feels snappier. What about the kind of like perceived frame rate of the user interface? How smooth did that seem?
Yeah, well, that was already good the first time I looked at the device. And you know, I can't actually say exact figures apart from what Nokia said, and they're saying it's 60 frames per second in the general UI, which is a 3 or 2 times improvement depending on what device you look at over the current devices. And so, yes, the perception is it feels a lot more smooth, it looks a lot more fluid, and I think that will be one of the big things that sort of comes out over time about the N8 is the fluidity of the device is a very, very significant improvement over the current Symbian One devices. Does that make a big difference to, you know, real world usage? Yes and no. I mean, yes, it feels smoother and more fluid, but at the end of the day, you can still do the same things. But I think it will help with the perception of the device. And you did mention earlier about kind of the big screens. You know, the N8 still doesn't have, you know, the big screens that we see on something like the i9-10 or some of the other high-end devices. For me, it doesn't actually matter. I'd rather have a device that is sort of holdable and usable in one hand, a category which the N8 very much fits into. But again, that is a, you know, rather subjective thing, and people will make their own judgments on that. But yes, certainly in terms of the kind of smoothness and, you know, a silk-like UI, I think the N8 is going to impress a lot of people.
Yeah, you mentioned the 3.2-inch screen on the C6 earlier, Dave, and of course the N8 has got a 3.5-inch, which doesn't sound like a big increase, but there are two factors here. One is that 0.3 of an inch actually does make enough difference when you're trying to fit your fingers on a virtual keyboard, and the second is that the N8 will also have, when Symbian 3 has writing aids. So for the first time on Symbian, I mean, admittedly, this is a bit belated. This is 2 or 3 years after the original Apple iPhone. Symbian's virtual keyboards will finally have full text correction as you get for all, to handle all your miskeys. And I think that will make a big, big difference. So going from the 3.2-inch C6 the X6, one without a physical QWERTY keyboard, which is entering text in the X6 is a bit of a nightmare. Going to the N8 with its 3.5-inch with writing aids, I think will make a big difference.
Yeah, I agree. I think 3.5 inches does make a lot of difference. I mean, I saw that especially when I had both of the N97s in for review. And text entry on a touch-only screen is really important. So, yeah, I totally agree with you, Steve.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate. Personally, I don't mind the smaller screens. I think you are right. When it's just touch entry, it's a big factor. But personally, my preferred kind of device is the hybrid devices like the C6 and the N97 Mini. So it's actually going to be interesting to see how I'll personally get on with the N8, which is, of course, keyboardless. Again, I think this is one of those slightly subjective areas, you know, because there are, as ever, trade-offs on mobile. You know, if you have the bigger screen, it's generally going to be a slightly bigger device. But that's all in the round. So be interested to hear what our listeners think. So if you've got an opinion, do email us.
Yeah, of course, the other trade-off is to do with the battery size. And I know, David, you're quite right in saying that the N97 Mini and C6 with a 1320 mAh battery, it struggles really to get through a day of moderately heavy use. Certainly, I've been disappointed every time I took the N97 Mini out. And the N8 has a smaller battery still with a larger screen, possibly using more power. Depending on the content you're displaying. So I think unless they've done some really serious power optimization in Symbian 3, I think the N8 just might struggle there. But as ever, until we actually use it in the real world, we can't really express a definitive opinion on that. Now we have some stats coming in. People know I love stats and numbers. Canalys have put in the Q2 figures for smartphone sales worldwide. The story is on the site, so if you want to look at the finer detail, but just in summary, Nokia still showing as leading the world with 38% market share, with sales of its Symbian-based smartphones up 41% year-on-year, I think mainly reflecting the fact that the move down towards the sort of mid to low tier has seen them selling huge numbers of things like the 5230 and 5530. The RIM's BlackBerry's in second place with 18%, and Apple was at 13%. I think Tommy Ahonen, a respected analyst, has been very vocal in pointing out that actually Apple's worldwide sales have been going down quarter on quarter. Whether the iPhone 4 will reverse this remains to be seen. But some very interesting numbers there, Rafe. Did you have the table there and anything you wanted to comment on?
I don't have the table in front of me, but what did stick out in particular was the rise of Android. And that's continued. Only yesterday, I think, we had them announce that they were now shipping 200,000 devices a day. You have to bear in mind there are now quite a few non-phone Android devices out there, so it's not perhaps as clear-cut as people might think, because there are various tablets and things like the Nook ebook reader as well. But, you know, nonetheless, 200,000, very impressive. And I think in these Q2 stats, Android had sort of sneaked into third place ahead of Apple and behind RIM. It's something like 12 million devices. There is quite a lot of variation on the Android numbers for Q2, probably because there's been such growth. And so, you know, the sources of data are a little variable. So I've seen estimates from 10 million up to about 12.5 million, 13 million. But given that growth has come in literally, you know, just a few quarters, it's very impressive indeed. And sort of the question, I think, on a lot of people's lips is, how far will that continue? You know, where's that going to go next? And I think all the evidence points towards the fact it will probably grow again in Q3. And Q4 is always a busy month for mobile, so I think you could probably say it'll grow in Q4. After that, it's, you know, it's more difficult to be seen. I mean, what Android is benefiting from at the moment is an awful lot of manufacturers are coming on board from having not been doing anything before, or having been doing Windows Mobile or other devices before. And so Android, I think, has taken market share from pretty much every single other operating system. It's notable that Android and Symbian are the two that are actually just outgrowing the market, just in Symbian's case, obviously very strongly in Android's case. And BlackBerry continues to do well, although there's a lot of questions about, you know, how long that's sustainable, you know, growing outside its core markets. And it's just announced BlackBerry 6 and the BlackBerry Torch, you know, kind of a combination touch and slider device, you know, nice hybrid device, which I think should do very well. But there's sort of the question is, how is that going to respond to Android? And of course, as the, as you said, the iPhone 4 question, particularly surrounding antenna gate, which I think probably, while it will have had some impact, is probably not enough of an impact. I mean, Apple have said they're selling the iPhone 4 as fast as they can make it, which I think is an interesting comment in itself. If they if they can sell more, they should be making more, is my opinion on that. but it is a tricky one there from a business point of view.
Looking at these figures, that Android, people have widely quoted Android as growing at 885% year on year, which is slightly disingenuous because, after all, they started from almost nothing. So it's very easy to get 800% growth when you're going from zero to a figure. What still speaks to me is the fact that Symbian worldwide is still, Symbian powers 43.5% of all world smartphone sales in quarter two 2010. At least a year or so after people were saying Symbian was doomed and Symbian was dead. And in fact, it's still almost as much as the RIM, Android and Apple combined. So as ever, it's very easy to knock the incumbent huge dominant market leader, and people have been doing so, but it is still the huge dominant market leader, and it is Nokia and Symbian's to lose still.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what the point about the growth about Android makes is how quickly it's come from sort of almost out of nowhere. But what's remarkable in that sense is that Nokia and Symbian, that have been so heavily criticised, have, relatively speaking, suffered little from Android compared to some of the other platforms. Clearly, there is an impact, but it's continued to grow, and that's because of its low-end devices, you know, things like the 5230. It's worth pointing out, of about 26 million Symbian devices, about 23.5 million of those are Nokia. And so in that sense, it also underlines Nokia's dominance, that Symbian, whose device really come from, I think you'd say, four manufacturers. It's Nokia, Sony Ericsson, that's the Vivaz and the Vivaz Pro, and then Fujitsu and Sharp, which are producing Symbian phones in Japan, which account for roughly 2 or 3 million a quarter. And you set that against Android, of course, where we're talking about multiple manufacturers, you know, Motorola, HTC and Samsung would probably be identified as the biggest ones, with, you know, Sony Ericsson also in there, I guess. And so it is an interesting comment, as I think you're very right to say, you know, it is still Nokia and Symbian's to lose. I think, you know, the next couple of quarters will be interesting because the rise of Android will continue. And I think there's going to be an inevitable impact on Symbian. But it's really a continuation of what we've seen over the last few years, where they are now facing more competition. Inevitably, market share does decrease, but that is going to be set against Symbian 3 in the next 6 months. And then I think what will be really interesting is to see what happens with Symbian 4. And that will be, in one sense, the make or break period for Symbian. It's not going to go away ever, in one sense, but it's a question of how successful it can be. I mean, when I say ever, I'm talking foreseeable future. Nokia's made the commitment now to it, you know, probably, let's say, for the next 5 years, for sake of argument. But can it attract in sort of other device manufacturers? And that's something we're going to have to wait to see with Symbian 4. And is there going to be a backlash against Android? You know, there's already rumblings of discontent over, you know, Google's decision with Android 3 to sort of take away some of the UI elements that are come from HTC and sort of Sense and Motorola Blur, and also kind of the service, you know, coming with strings with Google. I think in particular, something we haven't really seen commented on much, but personally I feel that there's going to be some operator pushback against Android in due course, because they're going to want to put their own services on these devices, something which you know, Nokia in particular has allowed them to do, or indeed has gone for co-branded services in the case of something like Nokia Messaging, and also Ovimats if you look at a company like Orange. Yeah. And so that's something Android hasn't really come up against. You know, it's been riding this sort of wave of optimism and to a degree hype, it kind of as the new kid on the block, but sooner or later some of the realities are going to set in, and that's going to come both from pushback from operators, but also manufacturers who will obviously want to avoid becoming just sort of Android clone manufacturers. And that's, you know, we've talked about this before, it's always been the big danger, especially for a company like Motorola. HTC, it's less of an issue, I think, because they have diversified across multiple platforms. But it is very interesting to see how this will make out. And it is going to be, I think, quite a bloody period ahead in terms of predicting it is difficult, but there's going to be significant changes all round.
Yeah, I've just got a few takeaways from just looking at this table as well. And I mean, it's good. I mean, it just shows that Symbian isn't doing as badly in the American, as the American press would have us believe. Because, I mean, the fact is they could still have the biggest market share and have some negative growth at the moment, but they are still growing. So it's good to see. What this table doesn't show, which I wonder about, is how much of it is on the design of the phones and how much of it is on the service layer. RIM with the BlackBerrys is a special case because they're very deeply entrenched in the corporate world and people depend on them and know what they do, whereas they're still trying to get into the App Store scene. Whereas Symbian, Android, Apple all have a service layer with the applications, and it would be interesting to know, is this consumer's voting on the designs, which is the bigger influence, the service layer or design of the hardware?
Yeah, and I think that also speaks to the fact that, you know, it is not just about the high end with smartphones anymore. You are getting them right across the range of devices, which makes it even more important to have a wider perspective than just looking at the high end, which is, of course, we said, you know, Nokia has suffered terrifically there in the last year. And I think the point you make about BlackBerry, you know, is very strong. You know, in one sense, it doesn't have the same consumer service there, but it has that very, very strong enterprise service there. And BlackBerry Messenger and BlackBerry IM has sort of come across and has some appeal in the consumer space, you know, particularly amongst the teenage and sort of young adult audience that's been seen in the UK and a couple of other markets. And I do feel that BlackBerry and RIM have a chance to exploit that a little bit more. But everything to my mind, you know, we talk about the service there a lot, but I think a lot of it is still people buy a phone first and foremost. And for all this talk about service layers and apps, you know, I'd say the importance of them diminishes the further you get away from the high end. And the biggest numbers remain in the kind of the mid-tier of the market. And therefore, when you're looking at things like shipment numbers, I think services may perhaps play a lesser role than people might initially assume. You know, I don't take anything away from services. They are the future, but these things don't happen overnight. And particularly outside the higher end of the market, you know, the relevancy of services maybe decreases, or more to the point, how good services need to be. You know, the good enough factor comes in, and people don't expect, you know, to be absolutely perfect. They expect it to work, but whether, you know, they expect to have specific higher end features or specific functionality, so it goes away. And I think a good example of this is Ovi Maps running across all the range of devices, and that can be very attractive. And people might look at it and go, oh, but Ovi Maps doesn't have the high resolution satellite photography that, say, Google Maps does. But most of the people who are using Ovi Maps in that mid-tier won't care about that. What they will care about is the fact that it's free and the fact that they can preload the map so they don't have to pay for the, you know, the data tariff on their, you know, on their tariff on a monthly basis. And so understanding that is not just a simple either-or or simple equation about how good it is at the high end. I think it's worth emphasising that complexity.
Yeah, absolutely. We're running kind of out of time with this podcast. A couple of brief items before we finish. The calling all innovators, or at least the best RSS apps, have been announced by Nokia as part of one of their competitions. And I mention it purely for...
Steve, we can't have you mention this. I'm sorry. It's complete bias. There is, as Steve says, this top 10 widgets. And this is part of a competition that Nokia has been running. And it's from the creation of the Ovi App Wizard. And it just so happens, purely by coincidence, you understand, that Steve has a widget in this top 10. So this is where the brainwashing part of the podcast comes in. Go in and download the Phone Show widget that's available on the Ovi store, and it's available for all S60 5th edition and all S60 3rd edition devices, and download it now so that Steve can win the competition and get lots of shiny toys. And I think
my hand is involuntarily going towards my phone
It's excellent. The subconscious marketing and brave waves are working, so yeah, go and download it now. Joking aside, there are some interesting widgets amongst that collection. Steve's rammed them up on the site for us as well. It's done a very subtle download link to his own widget. But it is sort of a success of the Ovi App Store Wizard, which I think has led to something in the region of 2 million downloads from the Ovi Store, and Nokia using this competition to promote it. And there's some fantastic collections among them, just illustrating that sometimes simple applications can be quite compelling. But if you're a fan of the Fan Show, and even if you're not, go and download it right now.
Yeah, I should just mention it's the phones plural show. A lot of people have said, I typed in the phone show and got nothing because Obvious Door does some pretty strict search matching, sadly. It's not very fuzzy. So it's the phones show. Just to mention a few of my other favourites from the top 10, just to plug it, to show I'm not completely biased. Toy Tragic was a rather nice site and feed with some lovely little Star Wars toys and collectibles. I really enjoyed playing with that. There's also a recipe-based site. I'm scrolling down there. Well, Purple Cookie, really nicely laid out, nice graphics, some sumptuous photos of the various the food dishes that you can create and eat, and most of which seem to be puddings, which really appeals to me. So do go and look at the list on the site. Rafe will link to it in the show notes. The best RSS apps created with the Ovi app wizard as judged by Nokia. And one final thing before we finish, Rafe, you were just mentioning that this week, as people listen to this, they should be expecting a little prize or something special in the Ovi store from Tesco.
Yes, that's right. This is for the UK market only, so sorry for all our international listeners. But this is going to be an application which, as I understand it, will let you do your shopping through your phone. Now, there's a couple of these already available for things like Marks and Spencer and Ocado, but I think this is going to be the first time I've seen it on a Nokia device. And, you know, Tesco's, for those that don't know, is one of the UK's big supermarket. It has an online order service. You know, you fill up your virtual shopping basket from the virtual shelves and your shopping is delivered to your doorstep by a Tesco's van. Now, this is going to be available on the Nokia Ovi store. You'll be able to download it. I think it's going to be S65th edition phones. The reason it's of particular interest is some of the background to this is that Tesco's have said they've gone for Nokia because it matches best with their kind of customer base, and it's the busy mums who might use this to do their shopping on the go. And I think it's, you know, a change from normal where we tend to see applications launch on Android or iPhone, but it speaks to Nokia's volume as well as its customer base that Tesco's have obviously done their homework and decided it makes more sense to launch on Ovi Store first. I think that's something we may see more of in the future as some of the developers become more aware of this. And actually, this is something that Nokia have deliberately done as part of a strategy. They've looked to do outreach with some of the UK's leading brands, and we're going to see more of these appear. The Tesco's Club Card was one of the first apps that we saw as a result of this, but you'll also see others from some pizza restaurants, trains, Auto Trader, and indeed many of the other UK leading brands. I was told this was at the N8 Developer Day that there's been about 50 engagements made. So I suspect we can see a lot of more big brand applications come in. And that's good for consumers, more applications, but it's also good for developers because that's part of an education process. And Nokia were particularly pleased to get Tesco's on board because they said, you know, we'll get a lot of co-marketing and things like the Tesco's Club Card, that's the loyalty card statements, and in their general mailings in the store. And of course, that's only going to add to the education about mobile apps and app stores in general. But seeing it come into Ovi Store first, I think, you know, big win for Nokia. Yeah. So we look forward to trying that out, and we'll be doing some virtual shopping to test the application out.
Yeah, thanks, Rafe. I should point out that the screeching and the wailing in the background there while Rafe was talking was not the fact that I have two teenage girls hostage in my house. It was, in fact, my daughter and a friend, and it's the school holidays here in the UK, just in case any police are listening. We are now right out of time. Just a reminder of our Twitter handles, if you want to keep up with us. There's Ewan, who's not here today, E-W-A-N. There's Rafe Blandford, Steve Litchfield, and David Gilson. There's also the AAS Twitter account for all our official news. But for now, it's goodbye from me, and in Sussex it's goodbye from
Rafe, and goodbye everybody. Get that in just in time,
David.
Yeah, and it's a goodbye from David in Hull.
All right, we'll catch you all next time on the All About Symbian Insight. Bye.